listeners, you're listening to another episode of Beckett's Babies, a playwriting podcast. On the show, we discuss plays we love, interview theater artists, and share our thoughts on playwriting and theater. We're your hosts, Sam Collier
and Sarah Cho, and today we are so super stoked to have Y Yim on the show with us. Y is an actor, director, choreographer, playwright, and a workaholic witch. I don't think we've ever had a witch on the show.
Yeah, this is a first.
This is a first for us. So we're very excited to have Y on the show. Y, welcome.
Hello. And then people will be turning off right now.
No, they better not. Like,
no,
a witch? No, what am I listening
to? Now they're turning up the volume. Exactly.
They're leaning in.
They'd be like, report, this is supposed to be a playwright podcast, and now it become a woo-woo podcast.
We love woo-woo.
Fiber, because of me.
So we like to start this question off for every guest. What is your earliest memory? Who were you before you ever heard of the word theater?
The earliest memory of who I am before the theater?
Yeah.
Or earliest memory of anything.
Of anything.
Baby, why?
Earliest memory of anything, I remember old, dirty, super poor Hong Kong apartment. But yet we oversee a harbor. So it's kind of fun, and it's just 1.5 room. It's very difficult to describe. It's like there's a living room ish, and then there's a bedroom, and I remember my grandmother and her friends are playing mahjong, and I kind of just bouncing on a bed.
And how old were you?
Probably, I don't know, 2, 3, something like that. Mm-hmm. And I vividly remember one time I swallow a piece of gum.
Uh-oh.
As a child. And I don't remember what happened after that.
Were you terrified?
No, I think everybody was more terrified than me. Mm-hmm. And I remember the lady who gave me that piece of gum, she's kind of sophisticated, kind of like, you know, well-dressed or put together, I would say, maybe not well-dressed. And then she was like, oh, I swallow plenty of them. It'll be fine, or something along that line.
Because it's such a big thing when you're a kid. Everyone's like, don't swallow it.
Right. And
really, what's the big deal?
Yeah. So like, I don't think it's going to cause anything. It's just a gum.
No.
So
you
probably poop it out or something. Yeah. But that's that.
Yeah. I remember swallowing my first gum, and this is before Google search was available. And I was just remember thinking, oh my gosh, like, it's going to be stuck inside me forever, and, you know, it's going to affect everything that I do for the rest of my life. Like, I was just always, like, thinking that way.
Okay. That was the earliest memory of something.
Yeah. Okay. So then, now flash forward, like, walk us through the journey into theater. Like, how did you first hear about theater how did you get into it?
First, I heard about theater. It was in a summer camp, maybe, primary school. So I was between probably like 10 to 12 years old or something like that. I remember there was an exercise. There was a performance. There was at the end of the camp, like, everybody has to perform something. And my unit, or my house, or whatever, you know, the people that camped together in my in my unit, we were assigned to do a drama or something. I don't remember. And like some other people were assigned to sing a song or like do a dance number. And I think our unit got drama or writing a play or something. And that was my first ever playwriting experience, to be honest with you. Like so young. And we were like, we don't know what to do. And then my best friend back then, we were both kind of like, you know, artsy fartsy kind of guy. And I think we wrote Cinderella. Something along like, what if Cinderella's prince never show up? Or what if Cinderella never leave her glass slipper? Something along that line. I don't even remember what the performance was like. I just vividly remember that we were writing like skits, and we were based on the story of Cinderella, but not a beautiful ending. Something along the line, like the glass slipper broke or something like that. Mm. So that was my first ever theater experience. Yeah.
Did you find that you loved playwriting and wanted to keep doing it, or did it take you more time to kind of find your way?
I didn't know what exactly playwriting was. We just you know, mess around. Let's make everybody laugh. Like, instead of, you know, everybody, oh, Cinderella, what if, you know, Cinderella's funny or something along that line.
Yeah.
Fairy godmother is a fairy god dad or something like that. Like super, like, yeah, this super stupid and that. But then in middle school or secondary school, then they have kind of like a drama department in a way. And then once again, like every year they have a drama competition or whatever. And I was never into it. I was more of a, you know, goofy, sporty kind of guy. Yes, me, sporty.
What kind of sports?
I played volleyball back then.
Okay.
I was quite tall. And I hated contact sport. I don't do soccer. I don't do basketball. Like, I just don't like bumping into people. So then, perfect. Like, it's either table tennis or volleyball. And then I was not very good at table tennis because I feel like, you know, in China or in Hong Kong, like, they started very young to play table tennis. And I didn't play table tennis when I was young. So I chose volleyball. But then somehow I was pretty popular, I would say, because I was, you know, playing sports. And then one of my friend who is a writer and said, we should write something together. And I'm like, sure. I wrote a play before when I was 10 years old. Sure, I can do it. And she was more like in line of like, that's what she wants to do. She wants to do drama. She wants to go to drama school. Like, she know what she wants to do. I was just one of those kids that just fucks around and is like, whatever, I don't care. Like, I had bad grades. I was never really a good student. And so we wrote the play together. I remember that I was fighting with my mother. My mother pissed me off or something. Like, we always, you know, was fighting. Mm-hmm. And then, so we wrote a play about mother and son fighting. And then, tragically, the mother died. And then the son... like, super melodramatic, super, like, daytime drama. Like, oh, no, what happened? Like, you know. Mm-hmm. And I think because it's, like, secondary school, so... most of the other playwright or most of the other students just interested in making people laugh. And we were the one that like super serious, like we have makeup and we do a like a slap in the face in front of everyone, and the whole audience gasp like, "Oh my god!" But yeah, that was the other memory of theater and playwriting, and I was the lead actor in that episode.
Oh, cool! The son.
The son, the
melodramatic son.
Horrible son that will yell at his mother. And
how did she die in the play?
I think she got run over by a bus.
That's what I was going to guess. It's like this story. I feel like I've heard it before.
It's one of those stories. Like, go get groceries, and you know, the son refused to help her, and she's carrying too many bags, and then the bus hit her, and she died.
Yep.
So I should start writing that play again.
Oh my gosh, I would love to read it.
All in Cantonese.
Yeah. So you were also acting and writing.
Yes.
And then were you directing at that time too?
No, those were all Hong Kong back mm-hmm. then. I did have, like, I always wanted to be a star. Mm-hmm. Hong Kong Idol or any of the karaoke competition. I always wanted to be a pop star. So that was kind of the role that I was following. I was like, you know, maybe I should, you know, just keep on entering singing competition. And then my friend said that you should apply for the Hong Kong Academy of theater or drama or whatever. It's kind of like a conservatory, just study drama and dance and all that. And I was like, sure. Didn't know what an audition was. And she gave me like all these monologue books that I was supposed to do. And I chose two pieces and I applied and I got the audition notice and I went to audition. And I'm pretty sure I got like a callback, or I was being considered or being accepted. I don't think I was accepted, but like I was like on the way to the final step to be accepted to the program. And then my family got the immigration paper saying that we, you know, we can come to America. So that was the decision that I had to make, to stay in Hong Kong by myself to go to this drama school or go with my family to come to America. And of course, I have to come to America with my family. And I kind of left that being a pop star dream behind. And then just, you know, try to learn to be an American, I suppose. And I came to America.
And how old were you?
I was 17 back then.
Oh, wow.
17 back then. And then, but strangely, somehow it looped me back to theater when I was in high school.
So where did you move to in the U.S.?
I moved from Hong Kong. Just imagine this. From Hong Kong directly to Omaha, Nebraska.
Oh, my God.
Oh, wow.
You know, big adjustment.
I see.
You know, the plane ticket was Hong Kong to Seattle. I'm like, oh, Seattle? Great. I heard of Seattle. It wouldn't be that bad, you know, if it's Seattle. And then from Seattle, we go to Omaha. And then way back when, you know, you have the 747 coming to America, so huge and like luxurious, and then went through immigration and then waiting for the next plane from Seattle to Omaha. It's one of those charter planes with the actually the wing, like the propeller, and we were like,
wow,
what is this? And then we got to Omaha, Nebraska, and there's the cornfield and everything closed at 9 p.m.
Yeah.
10 p.m. the latest. And I was like, this is hell. This is what hell is. Like, what do people do after 10 p.m.? Where do you get food? Like, what is going on?
They're all asleep.
Like, no entertainment. Where's the night market? I want to go for a walk. There's no street light. What? Yes.
Wow.
So that was that.
Okay. So I'm trying to, I mean, because I feel like, I mean, Omaha today feels like there's a lot more than what I'm guessing there were back then.
It was, I mean, Omaha is like happening now. Like,
yeah, it feels like it.
Like theater conference, the Great Plains Theater Conference, you know, many, many theater there. But way back when, it's not so much, I didn't know about theater, you know, when I first came to America. So the lifestyle changes was really shocking. Like, I didn't know how to drive and I had to learn how to drive. I'm like, wow. You have no subway here. How can you, like, that's not possible. Where are the buses?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You have to wait half an hour to get to what do you mean half an hour? How do you people go to work? So that was the big, big shock. And then, you know, learning how to drive and just trying to assimilate. And in high school was where I learned about choir and musical and drama. And that was kind of like the first dip back into, oh, maybe I can still be a performer in America. So that was kind of like my first taste of American theater is the choir.
Oh, wow. That's amazing.
I remember you both are so young. I feel like I'm so old.
I feel like I'm 100.
I'm like 4,000. Thank you. There's like Baker's. I don't know if you remember that convenience store or supermarket called Baker's, and they have VHS rental because we weren't that fancy to get into the Blockbuster yet, but we have a Baker's card so we can rent VHS at Baker's. And I remember renting The Sound of Music.
Oh my gosh.
That was the
classic.
A classic. Because my cousin was like, oh, you should watch this. You know, it's a musical. It's Julie Andrews. It's very popular. And, you know, you have the song Do Re Mi. I'm like, oh, I know the song Do Re Mi, like in a Chinese version, because everybody sings it back then also. So I rented it and I pretended to be Maria and just circling around the cornfield and just singing The Hughes Are Alive, but I'm in the middle of a cornfield. Like, I'm Maria. I loved it. I love, like, this.
That's
is
amazing.
This is musical. This is what I want to do. And then my counselor back then asked me what I like to do when I was in Hong Kong. I was like, I like to sing. I'm a singer. I was going to be famous. I'm going to be a pop star. And you must join the choir. I'm like, sure, whatever. And then join the choir. Like, I'm like, oh my God, I have to learn how to not sing the melody. I have to learn the bass line. That's crazy. And then they said that every year the big event is the choir department collide with the drama department to put up a musical. And I must audition. It's the best time. It will help me with my English because my English wasn't that great back then. I was still, you know, English as a second language student. And they said that, you know, you will be able to practice your English. You'll meet friends and it's so much fun. And you go to rehearsal and you laugh. And I'm like, sure.
You laugh.
I don't know any of those things. Do not know what an audition was.
Oh.
And the music director was Miss Carlson. It was very, very nice. She was like, you know, just stay after today's choir practice and we'll choose a song. And then you can show up to the audition for the first night to just kind of see what an audition was. And then you come back the second night or the third night and then you can audition. And I'm like, okay, sure. So we chose the song. We went through many, many songs. And then we got the song. And it's such a crazy, crazy story. Way back when, there was a movie called Up Close and Personal with Michelle Pfeiffer and Robert Redford, I think. And in the movie, Michelle Pfeiffer sang The Impossible Dream. To dream the impossible dream Man of La Mancha. And I was like, oh, I know this song. And the teacher kind of like, do you know, try this one. So I'm like, okay, great. So I learned the song, and that has been my audition song throughout high school and throughout college. The Impossible Dream.
Wow.
And they were doing Oklahoma.
Oh my gosh.
the American great classic Oklahoma. And, you know, there's only one ethnic character, Ali Hukam.
Right.
Who's supposed to be Persian. Right. And it's played by an Asian with a heavy Asian accent that you do not understand a word coming out of my mouth. But yet people loved it because it's so foreign, so crazy. And that kind of solidified my addiction to theater.
I feel like it could have easily have gone the other way. Like, I never want to do this again.
I'm
so glad that was it. That reeled you in.
Yeah, it was so surreal that I guarantee, if I have to relive that horror, I guarantee you, I pronounce every single word wrong in the script. Like, every single word wrong in the script. And but, you know, a couple of my friends was very helpful. They you know, they stay after school and kind of go through the lines with me. And and yeah, it became like principal want to talk to me, and like an instant superstar feeling of the high school. Like, who is this person? From sitting alone at the cafeteria table to everybody coming up to talk to me. And then I'm, you know what? I'm going to be a star from now on. Power of theater. So, and I just got stuck with it. And here I am still doing theater.
Wow. But so yeah. Then, so you moved to the U.S. when you were 17. You went to high school. I'm guessing you're a senior. Was that? Were you senior?
Yeah,
junior?
I was. I went in as a junior because.
Junior, yeah.
My auntie said that it's free education. You should just do one grade down so you can practice your English more before you move into college.
Yeah.
So I'm like, great. So I joined as a junior. So I spent junior and senior, and then I went to college.
Where'd you go to college?
University of Omaha at Nebraska. University of Nebraska at Omaha, UNO. They didn't have a musical theater program that was what I wanted to do. So I joined the vocal performance major, but then they were not very supportive of musical theater. So I had to learn like opera and all that jazz. So after one semester, I'm like, see ya. I just quit. And I decided to just start auditioning and just say screw it and take all the dance classes. And I was such a crazy person, just kind of just start auditioning because I didn't know anything. And then eventually I got some, you know, some job here and there, but at the end people said that you should get a degree, it's just easier, you should learn the skill to how to act and all that. So I went back and major in theater about 3 years later.
Yep. Oh, nice.
Yeah.
And then you moved to Chicago after? Is that?
Yeah. And then right after I graduated, I decided either Washington, D.C., New York, or Chicago. That's another whole story how I landed in Chicago also. I don't know if we should go into that.
I mean, I kind of want to hear it.
Yeah, tell us. So
tell us.
It's like the true Hollywood story. Behind the music.
What, all the details.
All the details. So I graduated university with a theater, with a BA, only a BA in performance and directing. And I was one of those students that kind of bossy and typical Capricorn, like Capricorn to the max. Like when I would go to school, I would do dance class at night, I would choreograph a community theater show when I'm not in the show, I would, you know, like, I'm just crazy. And then, like, if there's an audition for any national tour, I would just drive to Chicago and audition. I remember I auditioned for Wicked and all that jazz. I would skip class and I would tell, you know, my professor, like, you can fail me, but I'm going to the Wicked audition. And they were like, oh, we can't really fail you because you're so driven to be a professional actor. And this is the whole program about, I guess we'll let you go. I'm like, you know, it's actually more important to my career. I go to a Wicked audition than coming to do your final stupid presentation of the senior project. I was such a brat. I was a huge bitch to everyone. I'm like, just you wait. I'm going to be a star. So stupid.
That's amazing.
And so I, you know, I went out to audition and I went to like APTA, UPTA, or yeah, you know, one of those like regional theater audition. And somehow I got an agent from New York out of that mass audition. Finished college, I was doing a summer stock, and then the summer stock was going into like an educational fall tour around Nebraska with the Nebraska Shakespeare Festival. So I was like, oh, I'm good. I graduated in May, and I have, you know, lined up work until December. So I was like, great. And then after December, I was going to move to DC. That was my first choice because a couple of my friends moved there.
And they said, DC.
Yeah, we have some connection with Signature Theater and all that. You should come. So that was my plan. And then this agent in New York called me and said, hey, you should fly to New York to audition for The King and I, the national tour. And I was like, okay, sure. Yeah. So I booked a flight super late at night through United. And I finished the flight, finished the booking. And then there was this like flashing little banner or box, you know, saying, would you like to travel around the world for free?
Like an ad?
Yeah, the glamorous lifestyle of a flight attendant. I'm like, of course, yes. I click yes. Keep prompting more prompt. Like they ask for your name, your birthday, your address, your phone number, what language do you speak, and all that. Like box after box after box. And it was so late at night, and I was probably delusional back then. And I just answer all those questions, and then it pops up. We would like to interview you on this date and this time. And I was like, this is getting weird. This is probably a scam. So I clicked decline and I'm like, whatever. Went to audition, went to New York and audition. I think I did okay. Didn't hear anything from them. And then I did the tour. I was on the tour. And United call me and say, hey, we saw that you filled out an application online. And I'm like, no, I didn't. I'm all this question. I was like, oh, I thought that I was just doing it for fun. They're like, okay, well, we would like to see you. We would like to interview you. And then I was like, no, thank you. I'm an actor. So I am on tour right now. So I'm not available. Thank you. So I'm just kind of like, leave it behind. And then I finished the tour and nothing line up. And then United called me again and say that, hey, we would really want to see you. We would offer you a round trip ticket to go to Chicago. And, you know, you can stay however you want. You know, if you have a place to stay, you can just, you know, it's a free vacation for you if you want. And I was like, well, I have a friend in Chicago and Wicked was playing at the time. So I'm like, you know what? I'll say yes. I'll get the free ticket. I'll come up, see Wicked, maybe skip the interview and just say whatever, right? That was my whole point. But then I went up, I saw Wicked. But then I'm like, if I don't show up for the interview, what if they just don't let me come back? So I'm like, I should get the interview.
Yeah.
So I went to the interview and they literally hired me on the spot.
Oh my God.
Wow.
We want to, you know, we want to give you the job as a flight attendant. And I think it's mainly because they were launching China at that time and they need speaker for their flight. And I speak both Mandarin and Cantonese. So I was like, okay, I guess. And they said that I'm an actor. I don't know. I don't want to be a flight attendant. They're like, well, the job offer is there, but you still have to graduate. You have to pass all the tests before, you know, you become certified to be a flight attendant. So I'm like, okay, fine. I'll sign it. I signed. And I went back and I call my agent and say, hey, did you hear anything for The King and I? And they said that, yeah, it's cast, so you didn't get it. So I was like, oh, damn it. I have nothing lined up for the next year. What am I going to do? So I was still thinking about going to New York, Washington, D.C. And then right around Christmas, United called me and say, hey, somebody dropped out for the next training class, which is in January in two weeks or three weeks. Do you think you can come to Chicago? That's where the training is. And then if you pass, we'll give you, I think, $3,000 or something for you to move to Chicago. So that was my instinct. I'm like, you know what? I will go once again, taking advantage through United. If any people from United listen to this, maybe they will now.
Maybe they will now. Yeah. Well, let's make sure to tag it when we post the episode.
Sponsors, thank you. Free airfare. That was the whole goal. I'm like, you know what? I bet I can graduate and then I'll get the $3,000. I'll move to Chicago and I will start my acting career there to get an agent. You know, that was my whole goal, saying yes to the training. And then I came up, I went through the training class, passed with flying colors. And the first trip that they assigned me was going back to Hong Kong. So then I'm like, oh no, I was going to like, just once I move into my apartment, I was just going to quit. the first trip is going back to Hong Kong. Like, if this is not a sign, what is? I can see all my friends and I can, you know, rekindle with everyone. And look at me now, I'm a flight attendant.
So when you get a trip like that to work, how long do you get to stay? Like, how long did you get to stay in Hong Kong?
Two days. So it's usually a 4-day trip. One day flying over there is about 16 hours. And then you will have a solid 48 hours layover.
Okay.
And work the flight back. So usually it's a 4-day trip.
Got it. Oh, wow.
When it comes to international. So that's why I couldn't do any theater when I was with United, because I was always overseas in Hong Kong or Beijing or Shanghai. And way back when, they didn't have any Zoom audition or like video audition. It's all in person.
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't do anything. And I remember one of my friends said, you know, about acting. Well, you know, acting is all about life experience anyway. So I was like, you know what? Maybe I'll live a little. I will spend the first year traveling around the world and find who I am as a person. No cliche. But that's exactly what I did for the first year. I didn't rush into acting. I travel around the world, quote unquote, you know, go to Paris and eat baguettes and... you know, this super cliche thing, have my journal and, you know, journaling my life underneath the Eiffel Tower.
Wow.
So glamorous. And like, I'm going to, you know, Japan to get sushi and just fly right back. So that was the whole year. And then eventually I'm like, is this the rest of my life?
Mm-hmm.
That's not cute. And then... I, you know, it's time to go back to theater. And then I started auditioning, trying to find an agent, got an agent and all that. And then I started, quote unquote, slowly going back to theater. So yeah, so that was my journey from everything from Hong Kong to Omaha, from Omaha to Chicago. The seed was always there to be a performer, to entertain, to, you know, to act, to do anything artsy. But the ticket or the road that leads me here was never really theater oriented. It's always something else. Immigration because of the family. United wanted to hire me. So it's always that. It's never like I need to move somewhere just because I want to be an actor. So somehow it all works out magically, you know, with the universe, with, you know, everything just happens. So yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, and also it seems like you knew when to say yes to things.
Yeah.
Yeah. In a way, like, and it kind of worked out. Like, I don't have any job line up. Like it's such a huge decision. Like, can I be by myself in Hong Kong all by myself? Like all that is like kind of unthinkable that you can choose the other way. It's kind of like it's handed to you. Here's $3,000 with a job that is guaranteed that you don't have to starve, even though I was quote unquote a starving artist. But on the other hand, things would be provided if I just work a little. So that, you know, it all works out. And I do believe it in that saying. And I don't know, it's my saying or somebody says it. Like, if you will it, it will somehow. Mm-hmm. So I still hold that saying really dear to my heart. If you will it, it will eventually. Don't know how, don't know when, but it will eventually comes to you. That's what I believe anyway.
I love that.
Now this leads me to the witch part of you.
Let's get to it. It will.
It's a segue, Sarah.
It's a segue. This is a segue. So I know you are a tarot reader. Mm-hmm. And I really want to learn, like, how you got into it. How do you use tarot reading in your practice, like in writing or in your life? So I'm just curious, like, you know, your experience with it, because I feel like I've just been seeing more and more writers and playwrights getting to tarot reading in my life, and I was like, I'm just so curious of, you know, when this trend started or like why. And so yeah,
where it got started, I always believe that I'm like a woo-woo person, but I'm a nature guy. I'm a tree hugger. Even though when I was like little, when I was, you know, a little boy in Hong Kong, while everybody is playing video games or singing karaoke, I would go hiking by myself and talk to trees and just take the ferry and just ride across the bay and then come back. And yeah, I'm always kind of like weird back then. And then when it comes to when I get to America, you know, watching all these movies and, you know, being quote unquote how to be an artist and all that. And then I remember watching a movie called Running with Scissors. And in the movie, they were talking about, you know, subconscious or your conscious mind and all that. And I, you know, the way back when, you know, there's Matrix and all that, you know, about the subconscious. So I always have that in my mind, you know, what is the subconscious mind? What is the subconscious mind? I never really dig super deep into it. But then I know that I have all these voices, right? I talk to trees. I I see signs. I'm superstitious because, you know, my family is superstitious in many way. Talking to the ancestors and Guan Yin and, you know, all the protector and all that. So there's elements of following the rituals. And I think rituals are so important in my life. And I just feel like tarot or anything that you do, anything that a writer do or an actor do or anybody do, as long as this is ritualistic, I think there's a power in it. And that's where the woo-woo comes from. That's the magic comes from. It's through the rituals of everyday life. Mm-hmm. You know, you brush your teeth when you wake up. You brush your teeth when you go to bed. It's the ritual, right? Like, so that your teeth will stay healthy. So you do all this ritual, drinking coffee, drinking water. So why there's no rituals for your subconscious, right? That's some kind of like burning incense, meditating, talking to trees, you know, talking to your subconscious. All that can be structured into a ritualistic practice that will actually benefit you, just like brushing your teeth, just like drinking water, just like going, you know, 5 a.m. I go out to take a walk or, you know, work out, or the gym people, and right? So all that, so in many ways, after knowing that the subconscious is so important for our creative process, for our artists, for our artistry, because mostly I think writing and performing is really based on counting on or heavily relying on intuition, like what you feel, what you know, and how you can bring your experience, your life experience, and your subconscious thinking onto the page, to the rehearsal room, so that it's on the page through your body and through your voice now that you're performing. So it's all kind of glued together. And I was nervous about tarot at first because, you know, there's all these stigma about, you know, the death card. You know, like, I don't want any, you know, I don't want to predict anything bad in my future. And my dear friend Suzanne, she is one of my acting teacher, a directing teacher, and she leans towards more like viewpoint, more the not the traditional type of training. So I have the best of both worlds. I have very structural, traditional method, you know, type of teacher. And then I have Suzanne, who is kind of like free flow and, you know, tap into your subconscious and just let things happen type of teacher. And then she got into tarot. And then she was spending the winter at my apartment, and I saw her keep doing tarot, and she did a reading for me, and she introduced me to this deck, the Wild Unknown Tarot, which I...
Oh, I love that deck.
Yeah, you know, it's all animal, it's nothing scary, it's very familiar, but yet foreign, but it's, you know, it's colorful, it's beautiful. And since I'm a nature kind of guy, you know, I talk to trees, I talk to birds, and I'm like, this is perfect. And I got the deck and I start learning it. And then once the ritual of practicing tarot kind of generated, and, you know, I keep doing it. And because learning is, I think learning is also a fundamental thing for artists to dive deeper into your subconscious, is to learn something new so that, you know, you can go deeper into the subconscious. And that just helps so well. The ritualistic aspect of doing tarot and understanding the tarot, and somehow, you know, my subconscious are now more grounded in a way, so it's not all fluff and crazy, and it helps me to kind of generate more idea, or to confirm, not to say confirm 100%, oh, this is the right thing, but it gives you a confidence to know that is a tool that you can go into for your practice, just like working out, right? So when you lift so much weight, and if you need to move a box, you will know, oh, I lift so much weight at the gym. This is a 50-pound box. I can lift it up. And it's the same thing with the practice. Now that I have generated all this tool with tarot, not saying that it's 100% right thing to do, or there's no right or wrong, but you know, but at the same time, it urges me to just try it versus to wait and not put anything on the paper or being scared of, I don't know what to do. There's something kind of tapping on the shoulder. You know what to do. You know, here's a tool that you can count on.
Yeah.
That's why I like using tarot when I am stuck or when I have to generate new idea, to find where I can spice things up, or, you know, whenever you're stuck as a writer, you're always trying to find something. And I think tarot is a great tool on that.
That's so cool.
So yeah. You should all learn tarot. And
you yeah, don't... I mean, I know a little bit, but I haven't really, I've never really studied it.
Yeah. It's all archetype anyway, you know, it's all, you know, lover, warrior, kings and queen, the fool. It's all what we write. And when we do playwriting, you know, we always, there's a fool in the character, you know, in it's one of the characters, is the fool. There's always a lover. There's always the king and queen. So I think it just, it gives you some spice to how to mix it up. And it's just kind of like, instead of talking to your friend, your confidant, and say, I'm stuck, help me. And when your friend is not there, you quote unquote has a friend, which is the tarot deck, and just kind of like, oh, I never thought about the mother can be a villain also. Perfect. Mm.
Until she gets hit by a bus.
There's the play right there.
Yeah. And then, I don't know, can you give us an example of like a specific question someone might ask if they're, I don't know, let's see, let's say they've written a couple drafts and they're trying to write a new draft and revise a play, and what might be some questions they might bring to the card?
So I think you all have that dilemma. You know, you all know what the question is, I think, when you finish a draft or when you finish a play or when you finish anything. Kind of, you know, I am not sure scene two works. I'm not sure the relationship between the mother and son work. Overall, I just don't know, whatever. Like, there's always something. Nobody write a play and say, this is perfect. Like, you know, there's got to be one.
Some of my students do.
There's got to be one question, and I think you can use that question to ask the tarot and then get an insight to it.
Yeah.
And then, yes, it might be woo-woo, right? Like, but you don't know, like, what do you mean? Like, if I have a question about, does the mother and son relationship works? And then, yeah, sure, you can go through readings, you can go through talking to your friends, you can send your script to a dramaturg and then have professional look at it. Or you can just ask the tarot and just use your tarot card and just kind of lay it out and ask the question. And then depending on what your card, you know, after you pull, and you can kind of see, oh, either it's confirm, like it's great, like everything is, you know, in line as the reading, you know, is solid. They are, this is the right relationship. This is great. So then in many ways, then you can kind of put your mind at ease. Oh, you know, great. Now we can move on. The next stage, have the actors or whatever. And then, but then if you have a reading that is not quite promising, there's some iffiness to it, there's the death in the card, or there's some struggle to it, And then once you see the reading, there's always something. Like, you always have that experience when the dramaturg asks you a question. Have you ever thought about if the son is ABC to the mother, or if the mother is ABC to the whatever? Like, there's always, when a dramaturg or when a director or when your friends kind of say, I'm intrigued about that. So tarot is doing the same thing when it's kind of like not confirming. It's kind of like, oh wow, I didn't know about there's a death in the family, or there's a huge struggle. So then you can think of using that, oh great, maybe if I just bump up the tension, or if I just, whatever you need to do, or the tactics between the two, the language between the two, once the reading is there, it will trigger your mind, your subconscious, to think all these other possibilities. Oh, wouldn't it be nice? Mother did not get hit by a bus. She was possessed by a ghost. Like, all that.
Yeah.
And then you're like, oh my God, the uncle. Of course the uncle. You know, there's a devil right there. And that's the character. The mother is having an affair with the uncle. Perfect. Like, you know, like, all this magical thing was just kind of like, ooh, what if the son is the murderer? Like, you don't know. Mm-hmm. You never have that crazy idea until, you know, not saying that you need to follow through, but then those little knots will kind of get entangled just a little, mm-hmm. or just end. And then if you don't like tarot, or if you think that tarot is more intimidating, then you can do oracle, right? And then oracle cards are more informative, like release, or sunshine, or you know, spells and flowers or whatever. So once you draw those cards, you can think about literally what it said, sunshine. And then you can either prompt, like, write a character that is completely just like the sunshine. Or, oh, if scene four, instead of happening in the rain, what if it happened in the sunshine and they are talking about raining? Whatever. So all those little things that will trigger a prompt that will further your play or further your question along. And of course, you can just go out and go to a coffee shop and just, you know, look at things and, oh, there's a blue velvet jacket. I'm just going to write that jacket in. Of course, you can do all that too. But at the same time, just because there's a power in believing, there's a power of believing is a ritualistic practice that will grant your heart into a more peaceful place and not scared place to move into those dangerous or unknown territories. Same, you can use your Bible if you read mm-hmm. Bible, right? Any of those things that will give you some kind of confidence that there's a higher power that linked into your subconscious that will help you through your difficult situation, your writing, you know, where you're stuck in life, where you're stuck in writings. So just little things that will help you jump through.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Ooh. And also it's a fun way to generate character, I think, you know, like and the Queen of Wands, who is having a Three of Swords moment. So mm-hmm. like the Queen of Wands is all about passion and fire and arts and sex. But she's having a Three of Hearts moment, which is heartbreak and bleeding hearts. How can those two mash together? And then you draw a oracle card, and the oracle card is never give up, keep on fighting. And there you go. Here's your whole monologue. You can just keep on writing that.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And then, you know, like, any, and I also think that, you know, it's all, it's a great writing prompt in a situational setting when you absolutely don't know what to do. You wrote scene one and scene two, or you wrote, you know, the first act and then second act, you're like, I don't know what to do. And I'm just a little stuck. Everything seems so conventional right now. It's all been done before. Sure, you know, draw a card and then you'll be surprised, you know, with all the imagination that will cultivate and sparks after you do that reading. So yeah, so that's that. That's my tarot witchiness in my...
Yeah.
And also I think because, you know, when you were young or when you first started, your teacher kind of say, write what you know. So my first play is heavily leaning into tarot. My second play is also heavily leaning into tarot. My third play is also leaning into tarot. And then now, you know, yanking out the tarot elements in the play, what else I can do? So, you know, it's just another smart little cheat to get your work done.
Is there a wrong way to use them?
No, I don't think
so. Oh, really?
Well, I think there is. Mm-hmm. Not so much, depending on like if you use it and then you are so glued to it. Like, what should I eat for dinner? you don't make your every like, oh, I'm not going out to dinner because I draw death today, so I'm just I'm not going to eat at all. Oh my god! Like, what if you draw death card every day? Are you not going to eat every day? And you will die. And the tarot is right. If you will it, it will. You have see your prophecy. You killed yourself. And then, you know, people use it for like prediction. I'm like, yes and no. Because, you know, when you use it for prediction, if it's for comfort, yes. But when you lean into the like living the fear of it, then it becomes crippling. And it's the same thing. You actually will it, you know, you actually will the drama and you will. And I think it's a good cautionary, like, it's a red light. You know, just treat it. If you see a red light, it's just a red light. So what you do with the red light is all up to you.
Yeah.
If you see the red light and there is no car, miles for sure, you will probably cross the red light because you know for sure, like you're 100% sure. Right? It's the same thing with tarot. You know, like if you feel like, nah, but then you just get a little, okay, I need to pay attention to that card because it's a red light, right? So every single time I cross the street, I will pay attention to that traffic signal. It's the same thing. You know, every single time I go out or every single time, you know, if there's a meeting and then you pull this card about, you know, somebody stabbing your back or there's a totality. So when you go into the meeting, then you have that kind of like, make sure that you don't lean into those emotions, make sure that, you know, you take care of yourself so that you overcome what is quote unquote predicted or, you know, presented to you so that you have a little bit more, I don't know, like more consciousness to, so that, oh, you know, danger may be ahead, so that I just need to be more careful, things like that. But don't dictate yourself into, you know, into everything. That's how I feel about everything. Like, this is going to be controversial. I don't know if I should say it.
Oh, say it.
Just say it.
But like, you know, when people live by the Bible, Mm-hmm. Like to the T, like literally to the T, which is great, you know, it's all good. But then it become, I don't know, if you really truly believe in all that is to bring you joy, great. But then there's also, it will bring fear, right? It's always fear in everything. And then if you lean into the fear, would that benefit you? Would that destroy you? Would it benefit other people, or would it destroy other people? So that's, you know. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, it's like, yeah, you're taking something that's not literal, that's working on another level, and you're kind of reducing it if you only take it as literal.
Yeah. And I think it applies to everything in life. Like principle is one thing, but when you structure your principle so solely in one element or in one root, that's you're calling for some kind of conflict or problem for sure. And I think that's why East needs to meet West, North needs to meet South. It makes sense, you know. It's always a circle, it's always polar opposite, you know. We always have to help each other, and you can't just always choose to believe in completely one source, because otherwise then I don't know, you know, other opinions, and otherwise it'll be so narrow-minded, so single focus, and what is the enjoyment on living when it comes to so single focused. So yeah, that's that. And now you have to put explicit content in the podcast. Religious people will be like, how dare you becoming a witch? Crucible 2.0. Find him. He lives in Chicago.
Oh my gosh, I'm crying. Okay, so before we move on to Glistens, we have one more question that we want to ask is, so we have a lot of listeners probably that maybe they're just starting out in writing, directing, performing. We were wondering, what advice would you give to those folks that are tuning in? And they're tuning into this episode.
Be a bitch. Be a bitch and just say that I'm going to go to that audition and F your final project.
Oh my God.
No.
Great advice.
Be a bitch.
It's so vague, but know thyself, I think, is a good thing. Without that 1 year eating croissant, journaling under the Eiffel Tower, I don't think I would have missed theater so much. And knowing that theater is my blood, is what I'm meant to do in life, and you know, really solidly knowing that I want to pursue this, and I'm going to give my 110% pursuing this. So I think finding out who you are and know thyself is important. As far as taste or what you like, those will be developed eventually. So I say be open to it, but also knowing who you are. And it's such a vague, like, it's a big circle moment too. Like, how do you know who you are if you haven't lived? But if you live, you are poor and you don't do art. Like, it's that cycle, right? But at the same time, if you force yourself into something that it might not be 100% in your wish, it can be difficult, it can be discouraging, it can be damaging in many ways, because I didn't book anything for a very, very, very long time, like very long time. Even though I chose to, you know, commit my life to theater and to the art, there's a long period of time that it doesn't happen. I didn't get the gig that I wanted. I didn't catch my big break, quote unquote. But it's because of that 1 year and living in many ways that have kind of made me realize that even though things are not happening, but I'm meant to do this, that I want to do this, and I need to do this because I can't do anything else. I just cannot do anything else. The idea of being a flight attendant for the rest of my life, I would rather be a poor actor that never get his break. If that comes up to you, that answers you, great. And I think that's where you need to do, right? And this same for many, many successful Broadway actors. They have done Broadway for the 30 years of their life, and all of a sudden they're like, I actually don't want to do Broadway anymore. I just want to be a computer scientist. I just want to be a nurse and save the world. I just want to be a teacher. Those are all, you know, it's all happening everywhere. So, but you have to know who you are. You know, keep knowing who you are will eventually benefit what you do. And yeah, so take your time. And but I don't want to say that, you know, use all your time to find yourself, because you have to find the balance too, right? You still have to go to audition. You still want to take some classes. I think knowing yourself is part of that, right? Going to a musical audition, going to a play audition, learning something would all inform deeper of who you are. I really don't like singing in front of people. I really hate doing Shakespeare monologue. Like all that will just invite you to, like, you know what? I might just say no to the Shakespeare audition from now on. I'm just going to do what, you know, things like that. It will just kind of, you know, and then the more you know, the more you're like, you know what? I'm just a new play kind of guy. If you want your Shakespeare play to turn into a new play, I'm the guy. But if you are doing Shakespeare and traditional way, there's plenty of people that you can hire, but not me. You know, things like that. Because otherwise you get stuck into the room doing traditional Shakespeare, which you hate, then why do you want to do that?
Yeah.
Because then you have your 3 months or 2 months wasted, versus that 2 months you can learn to write a new play. What is interested in for you? If you're interested in choreography, you can use those 2 months to learn basic structure of choreographing a show instead of sticking in a room miserable doing Shakespeare, which you don't want to do. So even just the idea of like, oh, but it's a job. Well, if you see it that way, then it's 2 months wasted versus that 2 months that can be invested into developing something that you want to do, choreographing a musical. Then you can actually use that 2 months investment of learning how to choreograph and applying to further project that, and then you'll be doing something that you actually love, that you're choreographing a musical. So that 2 months actually never wasted. It actually benefit you, right? So it's all learning about who you are.
Amen. So true.
Yeah. Oh, that's great. Great advice.
Yeah, I think, I hope. Then, you know, if people have more questions on that, you know, please feel free. And we can all discover it together. I think that's one of the best thing about theater is we learn things together. We learn things about ourselves. We learn things about people's stories. So now that you heard my story, knowing that how I got here was not linear. It's not, like, I know what I want to do. I'm going to be, you know, I never follow, I didn't go to Juilliard. I didn't, you know, follow the steps of like applying for a school because the circumstances didn't flavor where I was in life. But still, I'm able to get to where I'm at right now, and I'm happy where I'm at right now. So it just proved the point that not everybody needs to go through mm-hmm. what you think you need to go through to yeah. get to where you will be. If you will it, it will.
And I feel like if there was a template and everyone just followed it, it would just be so boring. Like yeah. the fact that you were a flight attendant for a year, like that is so fascinating. That's so interesting yeah. to me. And I wish that's like a whole other episode. I know.
I bet you learned so much about people.
About people. Yeah.
Yeah. People watching, you know, the idea of different culture, you know, going to Paris, going to China, going to, you know, South America and all that, you know, just different, seeing theater around the world that is like, it's just so beneficial. And
yeah.
it's because of that makes me the artist that I am now.
Beautiful.
But who knows, maybe if I didn't get the job, I would have been on Broadway right now and kind of Tony.
I'm on Tony.
Whoopsie daisies in another universe. You be a fun attendant. Look at me now. I'm a Tony Award winning actor in this lifetime. Who knows? But then, you know, I'm okay with it. I'm okay with it because I know I trust where I'm going will still lead to what I want at the end.
Yeah.
So in the other lifetime, I get a Tony. And in this lifetime, I might get a Tony. That may be when I'm 75. Who knows?
Yeah. All right. Let's move on to glistens. So this is part of our show where we like to share favorite glistens of the week. It could be something you learned, something, a news headline that caught your attention, something that you discovered or learned. So Sam, do you want to start first?
Oh, sure. I am really loving this book that I read recently called Saving Time, Discovering a Life Beyond the Clock. It's by Jenny Odell. And she's really looking at how we're so focused on clock time that we forget about other ways of thinking about time, like ecological time or the time of the body or the time of, you know, the seasons. And kind of looks at what that has done to us as a society, but also what it means for addressing climate change. Mm. It's really good.
Mm. Very cool.
What about you guys?
Let's go next. Okay.
Yeah, you go next.
Well, I'll give you guys a choice. How about that? Since this is kind of a woo-woo episode, do you want to hear a woo-woo story or a movie recommendation?
Hello, you have a witch here. Of course the woo-woo.
Woo-woo story.
Okay. Yeah. All right. So I know we talked about a lot of tarot on this show, and I think personally for me, I'm kind of hesitant about it because I think I'm not hesitant about any types of like a tarot card or any kind of readings or something like that because I feel like, you know, all my life, I've just had these like weird experiences, and I'm kind of don't want to open up anything and bring unwelcome guests into my life. So that's kind of I'm not like, oh, I love this, but like, oh, I'm kind of like one foot out the door. This happened to me at least like three times in my life, and it happened again this week is Sam knows, maybe I've shared this with Sam a long time ago, but that kind of like lucid dreaming and where I go into like a sleep paralysis, like my whole body just freezes and I can't like move or anything. So that happened again this week, first time ever, like in probably 10 years. But this time it was very interesting because, you know, I have my husband with me, and I think, you know, because he's my husband and we're like so, you know, emotionally connected that like it was really weird. So this one morning I'm sleeping, I'm having this lucid dreaming, and like I was like, oh crap, not again. I can't move my body. I'm awake. Oh no, there's something here. Great. I'm just kind of like this. And then I hear my husband, but this is weird. This is the first time it ever happened because, you know, I have my husband next to me. I hear him go, like, yelling at me and being like, on your left, on your left. Like, look left, look left. It's on your left, on your left. I'm like, what? And I look left, and then there was like a really, really dark, shadowy figure just looming over me. And I was like, oh God. And then I just had this visual of like a big smile, like a really big smile. And then I don't want to say it was a knife, but it was like a sharp thing, kind of like just like standing over me. Just like, oh, and God. I was like, oh great, oh great. So I was just kind of like, okay, I have to breathe. I have to just move my toe. I have to start moving my toe. I'll get out of this. But then I was like really stuck this time. And I was like, oh God, just shake your feet. And I finally woke up. Like I finally got out of it and broke free from it. And then I look at Nick and I kind of woke him up. I was just trying to like pound, like hit him to wake him up. But my body's so weak. And he's just like, what's going on? And I was like, did you just tell me to look on my left? On my left, he was like, no, I'm sleeping. And I was just like, and I told him this whole story that I'm just telling you now. And he was just like, okay, this is so weird. But I just had a dream of you telling me to look, to go check in on our son. Like, he was just like, you were telling me there's something is wrong. Go check in on our son. And I thought I was dreaming, but it felt like I was awake. But like, we both had this weird, like, half awake, half sleeping kind of experience. You know what I mean? That lucid sleep. But it was happening simultaneously at the same time. Like, something was in the room with me. And I feel like I was sending something, a signal to my husband, in the same way my husband was, like, sending me a signal. Like, this weird mind telepathic thing or something. It was very weird, and we were like thinking about it and talking about it all day. And that happened like 3 days ago or something. But yeah, that was like, I was like, oh, I hate when that happens. It's just like, it's like a bad taste.
Did you go
taste
check
in your
on
mouth.
Augie?
Yeah, he was fine.
Was he like, oh, I just had a dream too?
I wish. No, he was just like, I think he was still sleeping, or he was just kind of like in his bed playing. Aww. Maybe, but it was such a weird. Oh. It felt like something. I was like, oh, it's something. Something is passing through here, and I don't know what this is, but like something is passing through.
Okay, let me ask. Are you afraid of ghosts?
I'm not. I'm not afraid of ghosts, but I don't know. I'm not. Sometimes I'm afraid. Like, this experience was sort of like, sometimes it just shakes me a little. Like, you know, I'm like, ooh, like my whole body just feels like it's ugh, like gross. Mm-hmm. No, but not really. And I mean, like, I love ghost stories. I love ghost, like, I kind of like, but I'm not like, oh, I gotta get into this, or like, you know, mm-hmm. like, but I just feel like it, since I was a kid, like, it's always been like these kinds of instances always happening once in a great while, and it happens. And I feel like now as an adult, I'm just kind of like, like, it was such a weird to say, like, oh, it's such a nuisance. But
I would say, you know, for me, I'm never afraid of ghosts. I'm mm-hmm. welcome to ghosts, because I think mix friends with your enemy in many ways. Mm-hmm. And yeah. Then I also feel like, you know, there's a saying, a ghost is there, it's just because someone misses them too much. And they won't let go. So they're just kind of stuck. So they're not evil. They're just stuck. Mm-hmm. And then that kind of makes me feel like, oh, I'm actually so sad about, like, I feel compassionate about ghosts even more. I'm like, it's because people that actually loves you and misses you too much. And, you know, like, it's you're not evil. You're just stuck here. Like, if mm-hmm. I can help you transition to say goodbye, by all means, I will help you. And it's the same way that we help friends to get through a breakup and, you know, all that, right? When there's sadness, when there's misfortune, and that's what people do to help each other. And I wouldn't mind helping. And then I also don't believe the ghost has, I always believe I have more power than the ghost in many ways. Mm. Like, I feel like I can actually get rid of the ghost. You know, if I do rituals, if I get a priest, if I get a exorcist or whatever, there's always a way to get rid of the ghost,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So I feel like I'm always in power of that. So that's why I'm not too worried about ghosts. And I actually make friends with ghosts. And that's my take on it.
Oh, interesting. Yeah.
Yeah. But then I also feel like it is your subconscious telling you something, you know, you should pay attention to that. Not saying that you're, you know, in immediate danger or whatever, but just the idea of both of you is having that dream, you know, just kind of investigate that, you know,
in
many ways about your routine and his routine and your son's routine, all three together. Is there anything that you forget or, you know, just pay attention to it. Just, you know, it doesn't need to be that literal that, you know, a ghost is in your house. But, you know, just pay attention to it.
Yeah. Yeah, that was something that was different about this time was a feeling of, I think, like, my husband was in the same boat as I was. And we were like, before, you know, I've had this before early in our relationship. And I was like, he had like no idea what was going on. He didn't have any similar experience. But this time it was like, we both had this feeling of like, oh, you know, help or check our son or something, you know, telling each other something. And I was like, that was weird.
Yeah.
That's interesting. Wow. All right. Sweet. Anyways, I think y'all should see the movie Elemental. Movie recommendation. I'm just kidding. All right. Why? What's your glisten?
I have been diving back into like childhood things. Like I'm like listening to cassette tape right now.
I love that.
Watching like super old movie or super old anime. I don't know. I feel like there. As of right now, I'm also reading this book, which is quite controversial, and it can be a little bit too woo-woo. It's called Becoming Supernatural by Dr. Joe Dispenza. How Common People Are Doing the Uncommon. I'm still reading it. It's a lot of about like past trauma, still living in your body. That's why your body is, you know, manifesting illnesses. So it get to a point that it can be a little bit too woo-woo, like, you know, mind over matters and all that. But there's a couple chapters about, don't live in your past. Don't live in your past and, you know, live in the now and all that. That's all we're doing. But now I feel like I want to investigate about the past. I also want to live back in the past so that I can live more present in the now, if that makes any sense. Just the idea of like, oh, I remember that movie. Oh, I remember that cartoon. I remember that anime that I was not able to watch it because I was too young and all that jazz, you know, all that restriction. And I remember that cassette tape and knowing it's also because if I investigated more about my past now that I have some spare time and not, you know, workaholic witch that working 10 billion project, that I can, right now at this point of my life that I am reminiscing the past so that I can actually enrich those memory so that I can remember them further. Because we're getting older, things are bound to you know, slip away, right? Mm-hmm. So I kind of reinvested my time on the good memories of my past, the nostalgia of my past, so that I can remind myself to invest in the now, to invest in that same nostalgic feeling way back when of, oh, remember that time is so happy and so joyful. Because as we grow older, we are constantly seeking for the next thrill, or, you know, like it's not giving you the same dopamine level, you know, like all that. It's slipping away in many sense. Like nothing thrills me anymore, or like, oh, it's all been done before. What else is new? But at the same time, if I invested my time so that I can nourish those feelings and bring those feelings back, maybe I can cultivate the same kind of childhood optimistic behavior and become less jaded, just to keep reminding myself that there's still things to discover, there's still things that is joyful, even though our body, our mind, our dopamine level doesn't react as it was when we first saw the dolphin way back when. Now we see the dolphin, it's not the same thrill, but you know, I like to remind myself, like, oh, it was that exciting to see a dolphin back then. Mm-hmm. So don't be that jaded now, YM. There might be another dolphin that will excite you in the future. So that's what I'm doing now, to dive back into the past. Yet I'm reading a book about living the now and try to cultivate a more beautiful future. So that's that.
What a great way to end this. That's a nice note. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for coming on. And wow, I just feel like I was watching like an epic movie of your life. It's crazy.
Hollywood producer, thank you. I know that I'm a nobody. Can turn into a book and then eventually turn into a miniseries or a movie. So I'm available. Contact me. Nice. Write that movie. Thank you.
Thank you, Y.
Thank you so much.
This is so great.
Thanks for tuning in to another episode of Beckett's Babies. If you enjoyed what you heard or learned a thing or two about playwriting, be sure to like, subscribe, and share the podcast with your friends.
And if you'd like to reach out and share with us your thoughts on playwriting and theater, or maybe be a guest on the show, be sure to visit our website at www.beckettsbabies.com. That's www.beckettsbabies.com, and you can contact us there. Thanks for listening.